following is an interview with Harold Lazar, L-E-Z-A-R. The interview was conducted by Susan Yowell in Mr. Lazar's office on the first floor of the old executive office building, July 19, 1974. Mr. Lazar is staff assistant to Raymond K. Price. We're taping the interviews, and unfortunately, we haven't been transcribing very many of them so far because we just haven't had the help to do it.
Sure.
We'll be here as long as we get it, and we have
sure,
something.
Sure, you can do that later.
And hopefully, one of these days, you'll receive a draft transcript
fine.
That you can go over and edit.
Fine.
Maybe you'll find that you wanted to add things.
Mm-hmm. I think that's
whatever.
Good, particularly since there'll be a certain
since
period
these are
of time
being done,
to be able to think about things.
Right. Since these are being done for the White House, they're considered the president's personal papers, so that
they are privileged to the extent the papers are privileged in
right.
the same sense.
Right.
Legally.
It's up to the president's discretion
sure.
as to what he wants to do with them.
Okay.
Anyway, our questions are pretty basic, but to have all that information located in one place, I think is going to be extremely exciting.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
It'll save a lot of work on the part of the archivists and a few other people, too. When did you first join the staff?
I guess my official date was May 27th, 1971.
And you say official, were you here prior to that?
Well, sort of off and on a little bit, not in an official capacity, but since I was originally hired as one of the president's speechwriters, naturally there was a certain period of why don't you try doing this? Why don't you try doing that? Well, yeah, maybe you will work out.
Was this done through the mail, or was
no,
it done?
No.
Were you actually here, or?
What had happened, if it might be of any interest, I'll tell you what I did before and how I ended up coming down here, if that's not a field.
No, that was going to be my next question.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I might tell you that I, right before coming down here, I looked at a little piece in the Ripon Forum, I think it was, where
uh-huh.
they referred to William Buckley's recommendation.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was a special assistant to Bill Buckley in New York for a year after graduating from college.
Mm-hmm.
And upon completion of my work up there, which basically was helping him writing a book that is yet to be published, I was on my way to Oxford to study under Hart and Dworkin in jurisprudence. It was about 5 months intervening, and I decided I wanted to do something. And Bill wanted to know what kinds of things I'd be interested in. I said I'd really like to work in Washington for a little while if I could try and help out someone in such a short period of time. Bill said, okay, I don't think you'll be able to, in that short a time, get any job that would be something you'd be interested in, but why don't you go down and talk to some people I know and see if they can suggest anything you might do, and perhaps if the right job came along, you'd be willing to extend for a year. Say you'd extend for a year, dependent upon how things worked out. So I said, fine, and I came down here and talked to quite a few people, one of whom was Ray Price. And at that point, Ray had just, within a couple of months, this must have been in March of 71, just taken over as head of the writing staff. And they were trying to get up to strength. And so over the period of the next 6 to 7 weeks, I was in town a couple of times, and once for a week, which I guess the White House paid me some kind of honorarium for. I worked down in Ray's office with him, took over his conference room, and he'd sort of give me little writing assignments, and I was trying to help him with a speech he'd been trying to get the president to do on complexity, a more philosophical speech, and also trying to test me out and see if I could be of any assistance to the operation down there. And it was as a result of that Ray asked me if I'd join the staff as one of the president's speechwriters, and I did.
Were you hired to fill in any particular area of speechwriting?
Not so much for any particular area, more to serve as, I obviously at that time was 22 and was quite young, and as a result not nearly as proficient a writer as most of the other people that they had working down there. But what I was very good and was I'd been trained in intensive philosophy at Yale and had worked with Bill Buckley on that kind of thing in the political area for a year. Was very much involved in philosophy of law and that sort of thing, and they wanted me more as a person who could help out in writing, do some of the president's actual writing, but mainly would be someone who could kick things around as we got into different areas and maybe get a new slant on the way we might approach it, an issue, particularly as an assistant to Ray Price, who was doing most of the major speeches at that time.
Did you have an official title when you came in?
Here, staff assistant, mm-hmm. The same title I hold now.
In the other background thing is, were you hired to do speeches or work on areas only for the president, or was this just a general staff assignment you might be working for other people?
No, I was hired to work only for the president through Ray, which would mean that I not only would do things that went directly to the president, but I would also help Ray to do things that went directly to the president. And as things have evolved, I don't know when you want me to get into that, but I can sort of tell you what happened down there, what kinds of things I did end up doing,
and
then how we ended up coming down to this operation and what this operation does.
Why don't you describe your operation while you were still with the speechwriting staff?
I moved to room 111. John Andrews and I, who was also departed, shared a secretary, Lillian Cox. My second week here, I worked with Noel Cook on a message to the Congress. The president decided he wanted to try and launch a new anti-drug program, which would involve rehabilitation, criminal sanctions within the United States, international sanctions. Would very much try to deal with the problem of service-connected drug disability, which was becoming a major issue at that time politically. It was something the armed services were very, very concerned about. I sort of got my first taste of what it was like to work around here, working on that message, which ended up being a major legislative message of that season. From that, as things evolved, I ended up, besides sort of working with Ray on most of the things he worked on, also doing remarks for the president, proclamations for the president, messages to the Congress for the president, such as the manpower message of that year. I did that. Law enforcement, revenue sharing message, I did that. A very long list, the normal kinds of things that a junior speechwriter down there would do. I did no official recorded addresses for the president, just the kinds of remark situations where he'd go off to speak to a group or something like that. Statements by the president, that sort of thing, but only for the president. As things evolved down there, because of the close working relationship that was envisioned, obviously, by Ray and that was established by Ray, very much as he had envisioned it, I gather, I ended up working on the States of the Union addresses and messages with Ray, culminating in, I guess, this last January. I did the written State of the Union with assistance from Dave Gergen's writing shop, and Ray did the spoken address, and I also helped with that. But every year, I guess, I've been involved in one way or another on the State of the Union, from the 72 State of the Union on. After about a year, as the campaign approached, Mrs. Nixon and the First Family were doing more and more speaking. The president was very, very concerned about their having good material because they weren't quite as experienced as he was. As he put it once to Mrs. Nixon, he could go out and just sort of do what was appropriate without any backup most of the times, but the family couldn't, because they weren't used to doing that kind of thing. So he was very concerned with their being helped. Our staff took on a lot of that function gradually. It wasn't something that was planned. And as things evolved, I ended up doing that on an ad hoc basis down there as well. We had a girl, Vera Hirschberg, who did that full time, but there was too much for her to do, and as it developed, I ended up doing a lot of that in addition to the stuff I was doing with Ray and doing for the president. When Ray and I moved into our new offices down here and our new responsibilities, which I'll explain in a second, I, as sort of a second job, at the request of the president, Mrs. Nixon, and Julie, ended up doing all the writing for 3 months for them as well, for all of their speaking engagements. And I brought on board a young lady who's now deputy press secretary over there, who I spent several months trying to find, who is their speechwriter now. And I gradually got out of that as...
Who was that?
Patty Matson is her name. The new responsibilities that we took on after the 72 election, Ray had been working with the president, Ray Price had been working with him since 67, and there was more and more of an interest in Ray trying to get out of the day-to-day operations of running the speechwriting staff and doing all these speeches, and trying to bring in new ideas to the White House, as well as trying to get the ideas of the president out better. The philosophy behind the actions of the president, not only to the people, but to the bureaucracy as well, and trying to start putting those things together so that you'd get the wider picture on foreign policy, domestic policy, how they are various things related. The president directed Ray to do that, just move into that role after the election. Dave Gergen, his former assistant, became head of the writing operation. Ray moved out of it and asked me to come down as his assistant in this new operation that we've been working on. Things didn't quite work out the way it intended because of something called Watergate. And for the last year and a half, basically, Ray and I have done all of the president's Watergate writing, as well as several other things, and worked with the attorneys on the Watergate case.
Maybe it would be a good idea to go back to the time you were with the main speechwriting staff. Could you go into a little bit more of a discussion of how you went about preparing the speech? First of all, were you limited to particular subject areas, or did you concentrate in any subject areas?
No, I really didn't concentrate in any particular subject area. By virtue of the fact I was the youngest person down there, youth kinds of issues got pushed my direction, but there was no specific area that was mine and another area that was someone else's and so forth. The staff wasn't divided that way. It was more a matter of certain people were good at certain kinds of writing in the sense of certain styles of writing. A Noel Cook could be quite poetic. A John Andrews could be could write something in foreign policy very much like the president thinks, much more so than anyone else other than Ray Price. A major address that had to be very presidential, like inaugural or something like that, Ray could do best. Something that had to be very partisan and very punchy, Pat Buchanan was very good at. Something that dealt with economics or various complex issues but had to have a certain light touch to it, Bill Sapphire would do. Lee Huebner was a very, very competent general editor, I guess. He could do a written State of the Union that was 125 pages long. He could do a message to Congress. He had been with the president since the beginning of the administration and just knew everything backwards and forwards, so he could do almost anything. Those were basically the writers when I first came on. Dave Gergen was there too, but solely as administrative assistant to Ray. He gradually started taking on more and more editing functions, particularly in proclamations, remarks, things like that as time wore on, although Ray retained the editing function on major work. It was very different from speech to speech or remarks to remarks or statement to statement in terms of how it would happen. Often it would be as a result of a particular action that the president was going to take. He'd need a speech, a statement, something to go with it, to announce it, to explain it, or whatever. If that was the case, then you'd usually start working with the substantive people well in advance, try and figure out exactly what was going to happen. One of the most intriguing aspects that future historians will find interesting, and I think they'll be able to see more clearly in this administration because of a lot of this material that will be available, is the fact that you often started writing something before we really had any idea what we were going to do. We just knew we were going to do something. Mm-hmm. And so your first draft would reflect one thing, and your 12th draft would reflect maybe the opposite kind of direction, particularly on messages to the Congress.
What kind of direction did you receive from the substantive people, as you say?
Well, it depends on exactly what it was. If it was a statement, you'd primarily work with one person on the domestic council, and then say, all right, these are the points we'd like to make. We don't know quite how you can make them, but these are the points we'd like to make. This is what we're going to do. Now, can you bring those two disparate items sometimes together and write a statement that highlights what we've accomplished, what we're trying to accomplish, whatever. And the emphasis would be different dependent upon the effect we hope to achieve, whether for psychological, political, bureaucratic reasons, or for any range of reasons, the kinds of reasons that are involved in the presidency, in his actions and decisions and deliberations. On something like a message to Congress, you'd not only work with the involved domestic council person, and on a State of the Union, for example, that could be 40 domestic council people. But you'd also work with all of the OMB people, often with the cabinet secretaries, the undersecretaries, and assistant secretaries. They'd prepare books of suggested programs that they were pushing. And we'd start out with those to try and familiarize ourselves with all of the options that existed in all of the agencies, and try to get a feeling for that so that whichever direction we went, say, this would begin, say, November or December before the State of the Union, which would be January 20th or so. And then gradually, as you could see which ones were being chosen, you'd be incorporating those to try and find the thematic areas that would be stressed. So often programs came about as a result of the thematic areas that were being stressed in the speeches. Often it was the other way around. It was a very organic process working with the substantive people. Something in foreign policy would be much more the president or Kissinger for the president saying, this is what I want to say. Often the president would do a draft himself that you'd work from, or he'd have someone in and say, all right, listen to me for an hour. This is the feeling I want to express. This is the action I'm going to take. So it's very different depending on the situation itself.
If it were
a more political situation, you'd familiarize yourself with the group, you'd talk to our liaison here at the White House with that group, you'd talk to the people in the group itself, the officers of the group, to try and figure out what they were expecting the president to say, and then you'd prepare materials. One interesting thing is the president, 90% of the time, doesn't speak with the text when he does speak. What's prepared for him are two things as a rule. This was what was done when we were down there. Whether it's the same now, I'm not sure. I would imagine so. You'd prepare what was called remarks, which were 3 pages long, and you'd also prepare a fact sheet. Often the fact sheet would include, besides the normal factual thing, you're going to be speaking to such and such a group, and this is the history of the group. You'd include little anecdotal things about maybe the president or the history of the group, or if it was a particular place, you might give him something historical about the place or something humorous. And then in the remarks, you'd have several items, usually unconnected, separated by asterisks, often a paragraph in length, sometimes a page in length, sometimes just a sentence in length, but suggested remarks, basically. And he'd get these at least a day in advance, usually 2 days in advance, although if we got very busy, obviously sometimes he'd get several days on the same work on the same day, and he'd read these things over, and then he'd go out without any text or without any note cards or without the remarks and just recall what he wanted from that, or often talk on an entirely different subject, something that struck him as a result of a conversation with the senator from the state if he was going out to Montana, for example, something like that. So there are two very distinct areas verbally, and that's the text and the remarks, and both of them are can be distinguished from the written areas, the messages to Congress, the statements, the proclamations, that sort of thing.
You mentioned that you, because of your emphasis on philosophy and at Yale, that this was one of the things that you thought you might have been hired for.
Mm-hmm.
Did you by that also mean that you worked with a group on speeches? Was it usually a joint effort to draft a speech?
On a major speech, usually what would happen is I'd talk to whoever was writing it if they were interested in talking to me about it. Often that would be the case, because what I was particularly good at was taking a certain set of facts or a certain set of themes and suggesting a new way to put them together, or suggesting a thematic overview or a conceptual overview that might be different. The most official channel that this took was, as time evolved, Ray and I more and more started working together on things. And anytime he'd start on a speech, he and I would sit down and kick it around. I'd send him drafts of my suggestions. Maybe I'd send him a memo. Maybe I'd just sit down and talk to him for 3 or 4 hours. Maybe we'd get together over lunch or dinner. It's very irregular in terms of exactly what took place, but it became more and more regular that something would take place between the two of us before he started to work on something. And so this was somewhat separate from the actual writing function I had, which was necessary just because there were only 5 or 6 speech writers and there was a tremendous amount of writing to do. So I gradually developed into becoming a speech writer, never of the stature, certainly, as a writer of the other people down there. Helping out wherever I could.
Do you think that your input into these speeches would be documented in the files?
Yeah, they are. It is.
And in what form is it?
It's in the form of memos. It's in the form of drafts of speeches, like Ray would do a third draft of a speech, and I'd edit it or write comments on it, and that would be in his files or in the president's files, probably in the president's files, because we do send most of our stuff to Rose Woods, who, particularly if it's got the president's writing on it. A lot of it won't be. A lot of it will be, when Ray Price eventually leaves, his reflections on how he did speeches, I think. A lot of it was verbal communication as opposed to written.
And how much did you depend upon the research staff?
We depended a great deal on the research staff. We it was very, very much a function of the time, the period. I don't think we ever depended on them as much as we might have for material that went into speeches. We depended on them as you were getting ready to write a speech for the factual backup. They'd often assemble that rather than our assembling it ourselves. Their major function came not only in providing us with this kind of material, but once you started writing, they checked every single thing, backwards, forwards, and crosswise, to make sure that if the president said anything, there was a source for it. Even an obscure little story, it wouldn't be enough for the president to say, there is a story. We had to have a source for the story in case someone called and said, well, where did he get that? Did he make it up? And that was the main function they performed. I was never too keen on exactly what they did before a speech in terms of providing you with, and I think this is sort of an observation most of the writers would make. I don't think that our research operation was terribly good at giving you material that you might twist around and work into a speech. But they were very good at giving you the kinds of facts that you might put into a speech. And I guess that's primarily what I'd say on that. Do you understand the distinction I'm making?
Yes,
there?
I think I do. You're talking about documenting the speech once it's been written more than...
That was their primary, the primary thing they did well. They did give you a lot of stuff beforehand, but often there are two types of things that go into a speech, remarks, almost anything. One is the light kind of thing. 150 years ago, such and such happened. Today, I'm proud to do this because it advances upon that. That kind of thing, they weren't terribly good at giving you. You had to sort of search out yourself. And one of the reasons why Julie Eisenhower particularly started using me to do her stuff was I had independent sources that I had developed, certain books that had good stories and that sort of thing. I read a lot of biography and history and couldn't come up with those kinds of things. Research staff was never particularly good at doing that. What they were good at was you wanted to know what the 8 major points of achievement were during the administration or during the Johnson administration on a particular issue. Or you wanted to know what the nuances of a policy were. They could get that, and they could get that cold.
Did you ever sit down with them before a speech?
Always sat down before them before every written thing and said, this is what I'm doing. What can you provide me that would help? Or often you'd say, this is what I'm doing. What can you provide me? In addition to that, this is what I would like you to find. But writing isn't the kind of thing where you really can figure it out in advance too well. You have to sort of start writing and then your thoughts carry you toward particular sources.
Well, I know it depended with the speech and obviously with the content of the speech, but were there any particular people in the departments or agencies or for that matter within the White House staff that you frequently relied upon for?
I would say that I probably would have lost my mind if it hadn't been for Paul O'Neill at OMB, for example. Paul O'Neill saved more speechwriters' lives at greater cost to his own sanity, I think, than anyone I can imagine. He's the associate director of OMB, in charge of all their human development programs, which is now $100 billion worth of the budget, I guess. And he knew everything in those areas. I mean, if you wanted to be able to say something, you check with Paul whether you could say that. Often you could run a sentence one way or another way, and that would make a great deal of difference in terms of how it was heard, but the same facts would be involved either direction.
Mm-hmm.
To make sure that you could switch the sentence and run it the other direction, you would check with Paul.
From what you've mentioned, you work mostly on domestic issues?
I guess mostly so. I think probably Ray Price and John Andrews probably did most of the foreign policy stuff. Because the president would take much more of an active hand in that and would use someone more senior. I often worked with Ray on these things, but those were mainly Ray's efforts, and I'd contribute something conceptually or suggest a quote that might fit someplace or suggest a paragraph here or a new ending or things like that.
One other thing about your work down on the speechwriting staff, were your files separate from those of Ray Price or other people on the staff?
They were, but most of my writings, of course, went to research, and they've got them there. All of my writings went to Ray Price's files. Margaret Foote, his secretary, and Pat Seaman maintained the writing staff files. The files I maintained on my own were copies of those, which I wanted for my own personal edification in future years, I guess. My own personal files, which would include letters I wrote to people or things of that sort.
Can you describe, first of all, was there anything else you would like to mention about your work prior to moving to this new office? Possibly an area that you think was not very well documented in the files that should be talked about in more depth in an oral history project?
I think one of the things you're going to want to at some point make sure you talk to Ray about or someone about Dave Gergen, another possibility, Ann Morgan, who's his assistant now and used to head the research staff, is the interfacing between the speechwriting staff as a whole and the president vis-a-vis Bob Haldeman, and exactly what the process was by which the speechwriting staff came into doing a speech, how they were alerted, what instructions they were given, how they were involved, that sort of thing. That's an area that, to some extent, would be documented in memoranda. To a large extent, was verbal, but it was a very, very particular operation, and it it's one that, that should be analyzed because it, it has a lot to do with the difference between this White House and, say, the Kennedy White House or the Johnson White House in terms of the construction of speeches.
Maybe I should go ahead and ask you now. I thought I would ask later, but did you have much personal contact with the president?
Very, very limited. Extremely limited. I think that was to a large extent because there just really wasn't much need for me to see the president. And that need probably diminished as a result of the fact my becoming more involved in more substantial work because Ray was, of course, continually in contact with the president. So there would be very little need for me to be.
So that for the entire period you were down there as well as here, you took your directions directly
from
Ray Rice.
Sometimes through Dave Gergen, but very seldom, mostly from Ray. When I started working with Mrs. Nixon and Julie and so forth here, in this operation and in that operation originally, all of those directions, not all of them, a lot of them came through Ray Price or Dave Gergen, but as I developed a personal relationship with the First Family, they gave me the direction, not some other person.
You did have more personal contact with the rest of the First Family.
A great deal of personal contact.
What about the other members of the family that you've not mentioned, Tricia and
I've
Cox
written
and
for Julie Eisenhower, David Eisenhower, Tricia Cox, Edward Cox, Mrs. Nixon. I guess that's the whole family. I've written for all of them. The main people I wrote for were Julie Eisenhower and Mrs. Nixon. They did most of the speaking, too.
Were those speeches, the draft and the files for those speeches left with the Ray Price, Dave Gergen shop, or were
they
sent over to First
we've
Lady
actually,
staff?
Well, they're in several places. We've actually sent some to Central Files ourselves, particularly when we moved to this new operation. There are also copies in the research files of the speech writing staff, which I assume when they break up will be sent to the library. They're in the writings files, the writing staff files. There's a set of all the writings the speechwriters have done down there. The earlier ones, I guess, were probably sent when Ray moved out, were probably sent to Central Files or to whatever the central depository is for those kinds of things at this point. In addition, Mrs. Nixon and Julie have their own personal copies of all of these, and they've probably sent them someplace, the duplicates of them. So they're probably in several places, and you'll probably run across them all over the place. Plus, they were passed around a lot because they tended to be very anecdotal kinds of speeches, that parts of which could be used in a tremendous number of places.
Sure.
And they're probably, the president's probably got a bunch of them too because Julie sends him stuff all the time. So Rose Woods will probably have some of them.
Just floating around all over the place.
Yeah, I think they probably are, and there are a considerable number of them. I don't know how I could estimate, but I'd estimate at least 100 speeches.
Was there ever any either formal or informal organizational title for this office when you and Mr. Price moved?
No, just Ray Price and Company, I guess. It was just Ray and Margaret, his secretary from down there, and me.
That has been the extent of the staff.
That's been the total extent. For a while, when Mrs. Nixon and Julie started insisting that I had to help them on their speeches, and when the president became very adamant that if they said they wanted my help, that I'd very well better help. And when Ray and I insisted that I also wanted to continue on with Ray and the kinds of things he was doing, and the president saw the reason for that, I was allowed to hire an assistant to sort of do research just for me, because we were placing a tremendous burden on the research staff down there, as you can imagine, without being part of that operation at all. A tremendous burden. I mean, I often would have three speeches in a day.
Who was this research assistant?
Her name was Debbie Kaiser. She was here just very briefly for maybe 6 weeks.
K-E-I?
K-A-Y-S-E-R, I think.
could you describe the activity of this office after it separated from the speechwriter section?
Well, the April 30th Watergate speech and everyone since. I don't know how much more I could describe than that. We've worked with the president directly on every Watergate speech, on probably every Watergate statement, and kept up with Watergate as best we could. Worked with the lawyers, the attorneys, worked with Charles Wright in the constitutional case last year before Sirica and the appeals court, have worked on the legal case up to the Supreme Court this time around. It's a subject that could easily fill many tapes, as it has.
I'm sure that.
To a large extent, would prefer when Ray, you know, leaves and so forth, that he would sort of outline what we've done. But basically, the kinds of things I would do is I started writing more and more parts of speeches, whole parts. I started providing more and more the conceptual backdrop for speeches. We became more and more involved in decisions that were actually made. A very emotional period for the president, as you can imagine. Period when he called on Ray more and more for material because he was so comfortable and known Ray for so long. It's a time when the president was spending more and more of his time with the people he knew best, since he had lost some of the people he knew best. There were fewer of them here. Gradually, over the last year, he started reaching out to the speechwriting staff more, although we still get called in on stuff not having to do with Watergate, depending on if the president. I think it's dependent mainly on what the emotional mood of the president is. If he's feeling very belabored by Watergate or beleaguered by Watergate, he would tend much more readily to call Ray and say, "We'll do this energy speech." Interestingly enough, that happened with the State of the Union, of course, and Ray and I did that with assistance from the writing staff. We also did last fall, we did the domestic legislation speech, the mini Watergate, we called it, or the mini State of the Union. We've also done one or two energy speeches. I've lost track. But over the past year, more and more Dave Gergen's staff has been doing the other speeches, and we've been doing Watergate.
Well, is the decision on what speeches you and Ray Price are going to do, does that come always directly from the president?
Yes.
Or does it filter through General Haig?
It comes directly from the president. Sometimes he'll say to General Haig, call Price and tell him to get busy on this. Sometimes he'll call direct. Usually he'll just tell Haig, "Here we go again." And it's just been an understanding that any time we did, that Ray and I would do it. There aren't even instructions necessary. We usually know when a speech is coming up. We just usually start on it.
What on the Watergate speeches, what has been the extent of your coordination with the legal staff?
Very, very close. It's been very, very close. We haven't gotten into, obviously they try to keep us out of certain things in the sense that an attorney would keep a non-attorney out of certain things because there's some things that we aren't competent to deal with. There's some things that it just isn't wise in legal proceedings to have non-attorneys involved in. And so that's been the case, although obviously this is a more political than a legal situation, and so we've been involved to a tremendous extent, more so than non-attorneys usually would be, I would think.
Have there been particular individuals on that staff with whom coordinated more?
Ray and I have always worked, even before he was counsel of the president, with Glenn Garment. He is someone that we'd always talk to about a major speech. He and Ray are very, very close, going back to the days at Mudge Rose in New York, Ray's office was there when he first started working for the president back in 67. And of course, Garment's office was there because he was head of litigation for Mudge Rose. And the president's office was there because he was partner in Mudge Rose. in John Mitchell's office and so forth. As we got more and more involved in Watergate, also in the speech writing, also Len Garment last April became counsel to the president. And so that relationship continued. We also worked very closely with Fred Buzhardt, with Jim St. Clair, basically with everyone down there. The young attorneys when they first came on board to help with Charlie Wright. In fact, I'll be studying law under Charlie Wright next year.
Oh, you're going to Texas.
Yes, exactly.
Makes sense. Have your files been kept separate from those
of the attorneys?
The speech writers?
Oh, yes. Our Watergate files, yes.
And since you mentioned it, have they been kept separate
yes.
from those?
Yes, although there are probably copies
office.
Of most of our drafts in the counsel's office.
Did they review your drafts?
Sure. They reviewed, they contributed to, and vice versa on all of this business. Very symbiotic kind of relationship. The drafts are also, of course, in the president's files. I would doubt that there's much that, in fact, I would doubt that there's anything here in our files on this subject that isn't either in the attorney's files or the president's personal files. But I would say those are the only two places they probably are, though, because they're obviously confidential and sensitive.
Well, you mentioned that you did continue to work with the speechwriter, Stan. Was this only on non-Watergate matters?
Not entirely. It was only on non-Watergate. It was on Watergate matters to some extent, mainly in a sense of, well, what's your feeling for how such and such is going? Or sometimes someone down there would look at a draft, but it wasn't the normal relationship we'd have with the writing staff. Since Ray had headed it, we were close friends of everyone down there. We've operated much more in the Hague Ziegler attorney's office Price kind of continuum on Watergate, as opposed to being involved with the writing shop and other substantive areas in the government. We talk to them, obviously. There's just some things that we wouldn't discuss with them, whereas on any other subject we, of course, would discuss.
Well, have you been in, have you personally, or you and Mr. Price personally, been involved in every Watergate-related speech?
Mm-hmm. I can't think of one that we haven't been.
Or speech or remarks.
Yeah. Everything the president said, yeah, certainly. And a certain amount of things that other people have said.
You mentioned other people. Has this changed since you said that you worked only for the president of the first family mm-hmm. while you were in the speech writing staff? Have you worked for other administration spokesmen since you have been?
No. When I say that, what I mean is, obviously, as the president's counsel, Jim St. Clair might go out and have to make a statement. A verbal statement, and he might kick around with Ray Price, Al Haig, the president, Fred Buzhardt, several people like that, what he's going to say, or what the nuances of his statement should include or emphasize. And Ray would be someone, and Ray and I would be two people that naturally talk to on a lot of these things, just because our profession is writing.
Have you ever done any speaking yourself?
I've tried very hard not to while I've been here, and I basically have succeeded in that. I previously had done a lot when I was in college and so forth. Debating is one of my major interests. Working with Bill Buckley certainly didn't cause that interest to flag, but no, I didn't see my role as being an administration spokesman.
Well, my major reason for asking that was thinking that so often the younger members of the staff
right.
are asked to do this.
Yes, I was, and I didn't. Best answer.
All right.
To a large extent because we were so busy. To a large extent because I just didn't think it was appropriate. Also, to some extent because of Ray's personality. Ray's a very, very much a believer in the anonymous writer and doesn't believe that we should be terribly It's nothing he's ever said to me. I mean, I'm sure he'd be very tickled to have me go out and speak to a group, but it's just not something I would make a lot of, that I was a writer for the president, because the president does so much of his own material, so much of his, so much of the assistance we give him is just that assistance, that I don't think either Ray or I would feel comfortable overplaying our existence even within the administration.
Since you mentioned the anonymous writer, have there been any, either in magazines such as National Journal, mm-hmm. I know they frequently do articles mm-hmm. on staff mm-hmm. functions, have there been any articles that have been published which deal directly with your work?
With mine or with Ray's and mine?
Well, either way.
Not down here. Not at this new role. I doubt that it's generally known by the press that we have a new role, that there is a specific role we perform. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they know or suspect that Ray's been involved with all the Watergate speeches.
I asked you before, and I'm sure that it's probably even a more open question on the areas that you've worked on since you and Ray Price moved out of the speechwriter staff, but are there any particular areas that you've worked in that might be more appropriate for a later oral history project?
I don't really think so. Watergate, I think, would be the main one that if you do an oral history project, mm-hmm. And as we get a sense of perspective back, that I think we'd want to talk about at some future date.
And I would hope that you would be willing to talk about it at some time.
Because I, of course, I guess something I didn't expect ever to happen, but I'm something of an old timer around here, since I predate the phenomenon. And, antedate it as well. Even before any of the Watergate-related stuff started in some strange labyrinth in the White House, I guess, or the re-election committee I was around.
Were there any other projects that you were involved in while you were at the White House, just as a result of your being here? Did you become involved in any either formal or informal task forces or other?
Not really. Dave Gergen used to represent Ray at a 2:15 meeting, I think it was, every day, which was sort of the meeting of Butterfield, Steve Bull, and the administrative personnel of the White House. And Dave would represent Ray at that to make sure we knew everything that was going on in the White House in terms of the president's schedule, in terms of who in what division of the White House was doing what, and I would sit in at that if Dave couldn't make it. And then when Ray and I moved over here and it became apparent we were going to do the State of the Union as well as Watergate, I sat in on the 9:15 meeting that was chaired by General Bennett, who was Haig's deputy, which was sort of the Al Haig version of that Bob Haldeman event.
Who attended those?
The General Bennett meeting was attended by Steve Bull, Dave Parker, Bill Henkel, head of the advance office, Dave Gergen, as head of the writing staff, General Bennett, of course. I think that's about it. The earlier version was basically the same people with the same functions, only when Bob Haldeman was chief of staff. And they, of course, were all staff assistants earlier and special assistants at this point.
On the meetings with General Bennett, how long a period were you involved in attending those on a regular basis?
I guess as long as those meetings existed, pretty much. Certainly from October, September, October of 73 through February of 74. I guess they started ending about then, mainly because of the State of the Union. We needed to know what was going on for that. On Watergate, of course, we'd know what was going on through higher level sources than that meeting, but that meeting was important as we got going on State of the Union, not only so we'd know what was happening, but so that we could communicate to the administrative personnel what assistance and support we needed from them as we tried to put the State of the Union together, as we began to put it together.
Who was your most prominent and most frequent contact in General Haig's office?
Personally, General Bennett. Ray's, our office's primary contact would have been General Haig, though Ray and Al would have talked regularly.
I didn't ask the question, but I guess that on the State of the Union, you would have, like on other speeches, ended up working with the substantive people in each area that was being discussed.
Yeah. State of the Union is the most interesting project imaginable, and I would hope when oral history is done, might get together at some point with Ray Price or and me and a couple other people who worked on it and discuss how a particular State of the Union was written.
How much did you work with the research staff and the speech writers on that?
Well, we've only done one when we weren't part of the speech writing staff. Mm-hmm. So all of them, other than this last one, the 74 State of the Union, were done down there, and we worked a great deal on them with the staff. In fact, Lee Huebner did the written State of the Union 2 years ago himself, and Ray and I worked on the verbal, the oral State of the Union. This one this year, it started out that there was only going to be a verbal one. The president was going to go out and give a speech. Well, then they decided, well, maybe we'd better have a written one too. So Ray and I started working on both of them. Gradually, the president said, Ray, you'd better get out of doing the written one. It's going to take too much time, and the oral one's too important. So Ray told me to continue coordinating and to get together with Dave Gergen and get all of his writers involved. So basically, what I did was coordinated and edited it and so forth as we had various writers contributing parts after the second draft when Ray got out of the written one. If you can follow that.
But it's a very complex process,
and each of these things went through 10 to 15 drafts. And on a 125-page message, that's a lot of paper. There are reams of paper in central files on the States of the Union. Reams of briefing books prepared for the State of the Union. OMB this year tried to put together sample States of the Union and suggested programs that they thought would happen 3 months in advance. Unbelievable process where the speechwriter had it really, it was in the crow's nest because you saw everything that went into it. You saw all of the, you were brought in early and could observe and take a hand in the process early enough that you often affected the process. So it was probably one of the most fascinating things the speechwriting unit worked on.
Something just occurred to me. Have you ever worked on any drafts of articles which have been prepared for the press?
Yes, I've worked on drafts that the president, of articles the president's done under his signature. I honestly can't remember what they are. I did an article for a law review for him once. I worked with Ray on article he did for U.S. News, I think. During the campaign, helped some cabinet secretaries do articles. I have a vague remembrance of Elliot Richardson being one of them. There's just so much writing being done that I just have to go through the writing.
Would
the writer's files.
Files?
They're all in the writing staff files. There was a master file kept so that no writers, who all of whom are very touchy about having copies of stuff they worked on, so that none of them would get away with something that would later be of some value to the historical record. So Ray's office, his personal office when he ran the staff, was very careful to set up a master set of files where the originals were kept. And those are in central files or wherever you send things like that. I think it's central files, isn't it?
Yes. I guess you've already mentioned you're going to law school in the fall?
Yes.
Starting in the fall?
Starting in, I'm leaving on the 31st of this month.
This month, and you'll be beginning law school immediately?
In August.
At the University of Texas?
Right.
Is it?
In Austin.
Do you know who will be replacing you on the staff?
I don't know that that's been announced yet, but I do know. Is it safe to say?
It's all right, or if it will become obvious.
Ben Stein. Ben Stein will be taking over my function, and exactly how he'll handle things will be dependent upon.
I don't know.
Ben Stein
name.
Is on Dave Gergen's staff. He's one of the president's speechwriters. He's Herb Stein's son, also.
Oh yes, I'm sorry.
And he's already a lawyer. He graduated from Yale Law a few years ago.
And I guess we've covered pretty much where any files would be.
Yeah.
Are there any places other than in the normal White House staff files or the speechwriter's files or the files that Rose Woods has? I'm thinking more in terms of maybe an agency file which might have a substantial amount of material relating to their work with you.
No, I'm sure we've got all that. In fact, we prepared briefing books, which we've sent to central files, of all the agency input. So there actually are books containing all of their input and what they recommended.
Mm-hmm.
There are files containing all of the agency's comments on every draft, and they're clearly marked. And we've sent those to central files. The written State of the Union, I sent all of my material on that to Dave Gergen's office, and I assume they've sent that whole batch of this year's State of the Union to central files.
Well, I think that about covers the basic information that we are trying to obtain.
Okay.
The only other thing that I'll ask you is, if you have a biographical sketch or resume, we'd like a copy of it to put in the file.
Okay, I've never had one, but I assume I can.
Oh, well, don't write one just for us. We just think it's a convenient thing to ask mm-hmm. for now. And,
I don't think I ever have had one.
I will get your forwarding address and a permanent address if you also have one.
Okay, my address at least for the next year will be 3309-A West Hill, one word, Drive, Austin, Texas, 78704. I will certainly be in Austin at least for the next 3 years, and we'll be in Texas someplace for the rest of the time beyond that.
Okay, you plan on staying in Texas.
Yeah.
You have a permanent family address or somewhere that you might
Not
be?
Really. My parents move a lot. My father's a sea captain. And so I could give you their present address, but I don't know
Probably
that would be good any longer than
years.
Mine would. Yeah.
Okay.
But Margaret Foote Ray's secretary, will of course always have my address in. And I'll continue down there to discuss Watergate with Ray or other members of the staff as they feel comfortable doing that. The White House will be providing me with all of these documents, and I assume while the impeachment business continues that I'll be continuing to be in contact officially.
Okay. I'll keep that. I hope you leave a forwarding address with your post offices
that I
from
will.
Time to time.
That I will.
All right. Well, I do hope that sometime,
good.
If the Nixon Library has an oral history project on the administration.
I think that would be a very good thing to have. An astounding thing to contemplate putting together.
Yes, I think it is rather.